Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm sitting across from Rhys Carter to talk about his new book, Happy Gut. Welcome, Rhys.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
I want to get a bit of background. This is where I want to jump. This is going to be one of those interviews where I go deep into your soul. Deep into your background. Tell me about your mother.
I was going to say, you have me crying. A crying mess here in the chair.
Because I like, with these kind of books, with health and fitness and... you're known as the herb nerd. Mm. I want to sort of work out where it all came from, why this path and why this interest. So, yeah, we let's go back in time to Western Australia.
Let's do it. Let's do a story. I'll tell you a story. So Western Australia is the starting point. You're quite right. I grew up on a farm in country WA, tiny little rural community called Tamman. Long before I was even interested in health, I guess I had a granddad, a pop, who was an amazing gardener, always had a herb and veggie garden on the go. And my mum is an amazing, amazing cook. And so I was always eating fresh produce, learned how to cook from a young age. And so by the time I grew up, went to boarding school and then moved overseas and then came back to Australia and finally decided to study, which is when I got my degree in naturopathy in Melbourne. I think I already had this kind of intuitive understanding that eating whole foods and eating locally was good for my health. Mm-hmm. And so I suppose the degree just further refined that understanding and helped me understand both the traditional medicine side of this, the nutrition side of this. And then I kind of just bundled it up, I suppose, with this gardening hobby and this love of cooking. And that's brought me to where I am today.
So you, for a while, I think you still are, a model and you were involved in that world. And in that world, you may come across a fad or two about health.
absolutely. But not only in modeling, but I have lived in Los Angeles for a year. So I have come across every fad in the book, and I'll be really honest with you. So when I moved to Los Angeles, it was after I'd done my study, and I'd set up a practice in Melbourne, and I was practicing full time, and I had this opportunity to move to LA. And I already knew more and more that I wanted to combine my clinical work with writing and presenting and kind of spreading the natural health message wider. And I thought, well, LA is such a hub for this and I've got to get over there. And I got over there and was bitterly disappointed to learn that it is over there. It is very much an industry driven by celebrity and by fad. And we see that to a degree here in Australia, but I still think that there is more integrity here in Australia and people want to learn and people are hungry for good information, I suppose. And that's really what I see my role and the role of my peers to be, is kind of keep on top of the current scientific understanding, don't lose sight of our traditional knowledge, and then translate that into practical and reliable health advice for people. And that's what I've really tried to do with this book.
So you talk about your colleagues or your... So there are quite a few that you've sort of met and involved with over the last little while. Is that to sort of strengthen your ideas? Is that part of give confidence to what you're doing? Or is that just pure friendship? People that have similar thoughts to you and Lee Holmes and
the Lee Holmes and that crew. I mean, I think of them primarily as friends, I suppose. Yeah. I think it just comes part and parcel with writing the books and doing your speaking gigs that you end up mixing with these people. And it's always nice to be introduced to new ideas. I think there are, it does keep me learning and keep me on my toes and hopefully vice versa. But I think there's enough difference between all the people who are currently writing that I don't agree with everything that everyone else is going to say, and I'm sure they don't agree with everything that I say, but certainly surrounding yourself with people who are actively researching and considering and writing about these topics invites me to and encourages me to do the same. So it keeps you fresh, I suppose.
So we had last year, Dr. Michael Mosley came in talking about the gut, and he was sort of talking about it as an ever changing, like it's sort of science and people with interest in the subject are focusing more on it. So everything is changing all the time. When you were writing this book, was it how much was like, oh my God, this is, wow, that's interesting. And this is new. And this is.
Even since writing the book, the research has kind of taken another step forward again. There is so much interest in it at the moment. And I mean, look, I think that intuitively we've always suspected there was a link between the gut and the brain. And certainly it was Hippocrates that said a very long time ago that all disease begins in the gut. And while it may not be the case that all disease does, certainly a lot of that chronic unwellness, if you will, seems to be tied to gut health. And I'm talking about mental and emotional well-being. We're talking about immunity. We're talking about systems outside of just the digestive system. But you're quite right. Michael Mosley was right in that, like, the amount of scientific evidence that's kind of coming forth now and the interest in the scientific community is growing and growing and growing, because even in just the last 10-15 years, we've started to uncover exactly what those links are and refine our understanding. And a lot of it comes down to the bacterial residents that call our gut home. And that's where we're seeing really exciting research at the moment, is how do we actually change or influence this, the microbiota, everyone who's living in our guts, through diet, and what does that actually mean for health in other systems? So, I mean, even and like I said, just the sheer volume of studies out there and research I did for this book was exciting in itself. And in kind of the time since I've finished the manuscript, we've shot the book, put it all together and packaged it up, there's been a whole lot more research again. And here in Australia, there's some exciting stuff happening.
So what's your advice for, like, I'm reading this stuff and I'm seeing lots of different points of view and fads. When you talk about your upbringing in Western Australia and your the sort of the fundamentals. Mm. Are you returning to some of the most obvious, right in front of our face, basics?
Yeah. You know, it's a really good question, because I think we're always looking for the new diet.
Yeah.
And the irony there is that most of the diets that come out, or most of the good nutritional research that is done, basically the actual kind of fundamentals are the same or very, very similar. And time again, what we're seeing is you need to start eating a lot of plants and of a lot of variety of plants. And we've known that for a long time, you know. But now this kind of refined understanding of the why gives us a new motivation to do that, I suppose. So those fundamentals you talk about have been for a long time, and still are kind of the truth, and they're that's the foundation of good health. So we're talking about lots and lots of different plants. We're talking about highlighting vegetables as the, like, star attraction of your meals, and starting to think of animal proteins more as a side. Good hydration, good quality, like, whole grains, legumes, all of these things that, polyunsaturated fats, all of these things that we know to be good, and that sound very much like the Mediterranean diet, are just kind of being rebranded and brought back to life. But really, you know, that's still what we've got to get right. I talk a lot about, little remedies in my book. And they're great. You know, I love my home remedies. It's a big part of what I do. It's a big part of what my first book was about. But they are still, you're just going to be kind of, it's like putting a Band-Aid on the problem if you're not looking at overall diet and long-term sustainable dietary change.
And My great fear with all this stuff is it's going to bore me. I'm going to be eating gruel. Is there something in your book to make me want to eat this stuff?
Well, I hope so. I hope so. That's what I mean when I say we need to be able to make... We need to stop seeing vegetables and seeing whole grains and seeing legumes as boring. Yeah. And start going, okay, how do we make these dishes exciting? And I think that kind of Otto Lengi is probably one of the best examples of that in his books. Like, he's made vegetables delicious and plant-based foods delicious. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to get people to see them as exciting and flavoursome. Because it really is. It's largely that simple. I highlight particular ingredients in my book. I'm thinking things like onions, garlic, asparagus, Jerusalem artichoke, chicory, oats. You're seeing a lot of these
broccoli.
I do love my broccoli. But a lot of these kind of foods that I'm listed, what we now know is they're really rich in prebiotic fiber, and that feeds the good bacteria in the gut, stimulates them to proliferate, and that's when we start to see all those beneficial effects both on the gut health as well as mental and emotional well-being. So those ingredients are star ingredients, but if all you can take away from this book is eat more plants and make plants exciting and start using spices and start using herbs and start cooking for yourself, then you're 90% of the way there, to be honest.
What about fitness and that side of thing? Is it gym and laps and boring things like that, are there other options for people to, you know, just to get out there and do stuff?
My recommendation would be, look, any physical activity is better than none.
Yeah.
Firstly, I think what excites you is really going to be a personal choice. I love my gym. I love my high intensity interval training. That's what I do. You don't necessarily have to do that. If you want to go hiking, get out there and do that. If you're more of just a catch up with your friend, grab a tea or a coffee and go for a long walk, do that. The key is making sure that it's regular. So you want to be doing some sort of physical activity every day for at least 30 to 60 minutes. And the other big one is, just even when you're not exercising, it's inverted commas, you can't see that on the podcast, but even when you're not exercising per se, start to move more of that incidental exercise, because there is now a whole lot of research coming out that basically says, look, even if you're doing your exercise, sitting is still an independent risk factor for negative health outcomes. So what I'm saying there is, you know, if you catch the train, if you catch a bus to work, get off an extra stop early and walk that little bit. If you live in a multi-story building, take the stairs instead of taking the lift. Instead of driving down to the supermarket, walk. It's things like that that are going to have long-term benefits on your health. However you choose to do it, and whatever it looks like, I suppose, is a personal thing.
It's a shame I didn't know this before. We could have done this podcast standing up.
Yeah, we could have. We could just say that we are. No one knows. Say that we're healthy podcast.
So when you talk about the happy gut, now the title of the book's Happy Gut.
Yes.
When will I know my gut's happy, and you know, what effects will it have on me?
Oh, okay. So that's a big question. The reason I called the book The Happy Gut is because I wanted to allude to that link between digestive system and the nervous system, mental and emotional well-being. Now, it gets really complex, and this is why I had to write a whole book about it. Yeah. Instead of, you know, a blog
read
post.
Read the book.
Read the book. Instead of a blog post. Because, to be honest, a lot of people will... Okay, so there are a lot of different factors that go into good gut health. I suppose that's a better way to put it. This is a really hard question. It's so complex. Okay, so look, first things first, if you have any gut symptoms, go and get it checked out by your doctor. Rule out anything more serious is always the first step. IBS itself, irritable bowel syndrome, is a blanket term that basically what we call digestive discomfort when it doesn't have when we don't know what's causing it. We've done all the investigations and it doesn't have a diagnosis. What that feels like for different people is going to be completely different. Some people just complain of ongoing bloating. Other people, it will be more extreme and they'll feel painful bloating. Some people's toilet habits will be really irregular. And all of those things are kind of a sign that you need to be paying attention to what you're eating. What the actual individual recommendations really will depend on A, what's triggering it, and it could be a food or it could be stress. You know, these are all things that you need to take into account, and we take a closer look at these in the book. Ultimately though, my real focus with this book, I suppose, was to talk more about how good gut health can improve mental well-being. So hopefully what I hope you would see when you've got a happy gut or a healthy gut is actually improved energy, improved mood, you know, better tolerance to stress and less tendency towards anxiety and things like that. Now, you're not necessarily going to notice a huge change in your gut symptoms there if you don't have gut symptoms to begin with. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, and we're talking about quite different approaches even. So for example, we talk a little bit about FODMAP foods, FODMAP containing foods in the book. Now, if you've got active IBS, if you've got active bloating, you may need to remove high FODMAP foods. And what these are what we call, they're fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. FODMAP, yep, that's right. And they are fibers essentially, or carbohydrates that don't get digested in the body for a number of reasons, go through into the large intestine, and the bacteria there ferment them and wreak havoc, basically, because we don't use them as a food source. The bacteria do, and they create gas, and there's, you know, bloating and pain and all kinds of stuff. So a lot of times people will feel relief from removing some of those compounds that could be easily fermented from their diet. And I think that's a fantastic first step.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the whole picture, because here's why it's so difficult to talk about this topic in short, sharp sentences, is that a lot of these prebiotics that we were talking about are FODMAPs. They're the same thing. So what we actually need to kind of do is to pull the FODMAP foods out for a little while, do some other gut healing measures, which again I kind of detail in the book, and then ultimately my goal and most nutritionists and naturopaths' goal would be to actually get as many of these prebiotics in the diet as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as they can be tolerated, we actually want to ultimately be increasing them, because that's what's going to have all the positive effects on the microbiota, and therefore the positive effects on mood and on immunity and things like that. So it's kind of a chicken or an egg scenario.
Yeah.
And it's very much a personal experience. And so that's, you know, that's why I hope it's not a one size fits all approach. But I hope that what the book does is explains each of those concepts well enough that people feel comfortable to go away and put it in practice and work out what works for them.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you didn't have any, you know, symptoms of unhappy gut,
mm-hmm.
Your mood, general mood change from eating better might be sort of a symptom of it working.
Yeah, exactly. You might not have any. I'll just talk about personal experience. For example, the reason I wrote this as my second book was that I kind of found myself falling victim to something that we all do, in that it's very easy sometimes to, even if you know you're not meant to do it, you overwork. And I was overworked, and I was stressed, and my anxiety was through the roof, and I wasn't sleeping very well. And I had to pull myself up one day and go, Reese, like, you give so much advice to clients in your clinic on this all the time, and yet you're not putting it in practice yourself anymore. I just got carried away. Like, I didn't see the warning signs until it was too late that I was speeding towards burnout. Now, I personally don't get any gut symptoms, but the research shows that often they coincide. But that doesn't mean that I didn't treat gut health. So I stopped myself there and then, and I thought, okay, well, what do I need to do? And I looked at my diet and I was eating okay. I was eating, you know, all right foods, but I was grabbing most of it on the go. I wasn't cooking for myself and I wasn't choosing exactly what I was eating. And I was like, all right, I'm going to put myself on a little gut health protocol. And so I did exactly what I've just explained to you. I really made a renewed focus to eat more of these prebiotic containing vegetables. I made sure that my hydration was better. I made sure that I was putting stress management techniques in place. All of those kinds of things, and really focused on improving gut health, even though I didn't have gut symptoms, to improve mood. And sure enough, over the space of a month or two, my own sleep got a lot better. My own mood got a lot better. And that was what told me that it was working. In saying that, the research does show that in kind of a percentage of mental health complaints, that IBS type symptoms precedes it, and then the other way around as well. So a lot of people who come in complaining of digestive upset will actually have had mental health concerns around ahead of that. So it is this bi-directional link, and not everyone's going to experience things in the same order or the same intensity.
Reese, thank you so much for
talking to us. That's all right. Thanks for having me.
It's been marvelous because it is a complex subject, and you've explained a lot of the things very well. But you know, you will have to turn to the book. It's not a blog post, as you said.
Yeah.
And there will be more advice in the book. And it sounds to me like there should be a little bit of experimentation with different programs within the book.
Absolutely. I mean, look, first things first, if you've got any digestive complaint or any mental health complaint, you need to be going to see your doctor. Like, that's obviously it. What my book then does is, if you walk away and you don't have any disease process or you don't have any diagnosis, this is about optimal wellness. And you go, you know what though? I don't have whatever. I don't have a diagnosis, but I know that something's not right or my health could be better. That's when you pick up the book. And it's broken down into chapters about, how do you feed this good bacteria? What foods and what remedies treat bloating and can help you manage these digestive complaints? So you need to read it. You need to work out which bits apply to you and which don't, and piece together your own gut health plan.
Brilliant. Thank you, Reese.
Thank you.
And you can get hold of both of Reese Carter's books at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.